I call the meeting of the Committee on Energy and Finance and Policy to order, and we have a quorum. We have the minutes from March 6th. Our first item of business is approval of the minutes. Representative Mecklen, have you reviewed the minutes?
Mr. Chair, I have reviewed the minutes from March 6, 2025, and I move them.
Yep. Representative Mecklen moves the approval of the minutes for March 6, 2025. Is there any discussion? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Minutes from March 6 are approved. We have, folks, we've got a couple of bills ahead of us here today. We have Representative Igo with House File 252 is our first bill up. And the motion is to be placed on the general register. Representative Igo, you want to make a motion for your bill, and you can begin your testimony.
Yeah, so move, Mr. Chair. I'll move that House File 252 be moved to the general register. Mr. Chair and members, House File 252 in front of us today is some slight revisions around our small gas utilities. What we've seen over the last couple of years, and this has been a piece of legislation, part of our statute, that's kind of been opened up about every decade or so as things grow and as things change. At the core of what this bill would be doing today is making sure we're allowing for greater Minnesota development to get at some of the core principles that this committee looks for, which is affordability and reliability for energy. So the bill today has been being worked on for a while, but I think it'd just be better for me to go to one of my testifiers today who can really get into and kind of give a good walkthrough of where we're at and how we got to this point, and then we can, I think, open up for questions would be best.
We have Rachel Sorrentino from Northwest Gas, if you want to come on up and introduce yourself to the committee and where you're from, and you can begin your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Rachel Sorrentino. I'm with Northwest Gas, and I'm here to testify in favor of House File 252. Representative Igo explained the bill, and I know there's additional information in the handouts provided with today's agenda, and I'm not going to walk through those in detail. So I'd just like to call your attention to a few specific considerations. The first is that with this bill, we are not looking to be unregulated. We are seeking to preserve existing local regulations, the regulation of small systems. They can't bear the costs associated with PUC rate regulation. And the exemption provision was originally created for this reason, and we are seeking to modify the exemption language to clarify and better align it with its original intent. Exemption provision has been revised and expanded several times in the past, and there's a brief history in the handouts. And each time, changes were made as an effort to allow continued local regulation of small systems. So the intent was to preserve and encourage these systems, not limit them, because they do benefit the communities that they serve. The problem is that those changes were always a response to a specific situation, and so they tended to be very reactive. And we're now facing another specific situation that's not clearly addressed by the statute, but rather than applying another quick fix, we'd like to see a forward-looking solution that addresses the underlying issues and would prevent having to revise it again in the future. And this is mentioned in the handouts too. The core issue is that PUC rate oversight doesn't work well for small systems because of system-specific cost structures, but the exemption language in the statute is utility-specific. House File 252 would link an exemption to a system rather than to a utility, and thus to the cost structures that justify the exemption in the first place. So no matter who owns or operates a particular system, that system could remain exempt until it grows big enough to bear the costs of the PUC process. I also want to address a particular argument against the bill. Some have raised the question, what would prevent a utility that's already subject to the PUC's rate regulation from exempting some of their smaller systems? Because as I'm sure you're aware, CenterPoint, Xcel, Merck, and some of the other large utilities, they don't just operate here in the metro area. They have smaller systems that are separate from their big metro systems across the state. And some of those may serve fewer than 5,000 customers. So it is a valid question. But it's already addressed in the statute. As it's currently written, and we are not seeking to change this because we believe this is an appropriate allocation of power, a utility does not have the authority to request exemption. That request has to come from the municipality. So if a utility wants to gain an exemption, they have to work with the city. Now, if House File 252 is passed and a utility convinces a municipality to request exemption for a small system by promising lower rates, and then those lower rates don't materialize, the city can simply rescind the exemption, and then the oversight goes right back to the PUC, and that exists today. And if a utility works with the city to gain an exemption, and then they are able to charge lower rates, then everybody wins. So the point is that the power to request and rescind exemption lies solely with the municipality. And that gives them a lot of leverage to protect their constituents' interests. And the revisions that we're seeking would not change that. Lastly, regarding the letter from the Minnesota Propane Association, our company is also in the propane business, and we're actually members of the MPA, but the letter is misleading. And in the interest of time, I'm not going to address it point by point. I will simply say it contains multiple technical inaccuracies. It oversimplifies and draws false conclusions about the way that exempt small gas utilities operate within the communities they serve, and it focuses on the needs of the propane industry over the needs of Minnesota's energy consumers. Thank you for your time. I encourage you to vote in favor of House File 252, and I'm happy to answer any questions you have.
Does anyone have any questions for the testifier? Representative Carroll.
Thank you, Chair. Quick question. I don't see a definition for customer. Is that as to the ratepayer, or is that as to the residents? Or
that was actually a subject of. Oh, I'm sorry.
That's
right. Mr. Chair and Mr. Representative Carroll. That was actually a subject that came up in a PUC inquiry a few years ago. So the PUC has decided on a definition of customer that is appropriate, and it basically is the entity that contracts for service. So, like, say, for example, if there's a farmer who has a corn dryer and a house and he has separate meters on both, it's one customer. And if somebody has an account at their business and they have an account in their personal name, that would be two customers because it's two separate entities. Does that answer your question?
Yes. Representative Carroll, do you have
Thank
a follow-up?
You. Nope.
That's all right. Sounds good. Representative Akam.
Since we're talking about definitions, so I see system is defined in the bill on line 2.1. Is that system, is that definition found elsewhere in statute?
Not
Ms. Sorrentino?
Sorry. not that I'm aware of, no. We did have to look at something that would be
Representative
clear
Akam.
On this front.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you. And then how many utilities would this passing this bill impact, and what utilities or utility would that be?
Ms. Sorrentino?
Representative Akam, it would be, I don't have an exact count, but there are several small gas utilities within Minnesota already. I know the slides mentioned that there are others that are not far behind this, so this likely will come up again. In addition to us, seven or eight other companies that also operate as small gas utilities in the state.
Representative Akam.
And just to follow up on that, then, that are in the same situation that your utility is in, or would passing this just make the situation better for your utility right now?
Ms. Sorrentino.
It would make it better for our utility right now, but as I said, there are others that are intending to grow their systems, and they're looking at this also and realizing that this will be an issue in the future for them too. We just happen to be the first.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Is there anyone from the public that would like to testify on behalf of this bill or with concerns at all? All right, Representative Jones.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I think this question is maybe for Representative Igo. Your testifier had mentioned, you know, part of this is, she mentioned the terms opportunity to grow the systems, and so I just, I'm curious about, given the 100% law, like, this seems a little antithetical to that, you know, for growing gas systems, so I just wanted to maybe hear your comments about how those two would align.
Representative Igo.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Jones. So what we're looking at, and we've talked about in this committee a lot, Greater Minnesota is a lot different than our metro, and we need to keep in mind what comes down to affordability and reliability. And some of these things that we're talking about when we talk about natural gas systems aren't necessarily just heating homes, right? These are businesses that, for the foreseeable future, are still going to need natural gas. And as we look outside of this committee and how important these conversations are, we're talking about revitalizing Greater Minnesota communities with economic diversity. We're also talking about, you know, increasing their housing stock and housing options to go into their schools. You need to have affordable and reliable power, and sometimes that's going to be natural gas, even for the foreseeable future for some of the things that we produce in Greater Minnesota. So the reason that this bill is in front of us today is so we can have these systems have that ability to partner with our communities, and then when they can get their legs under them, then they will go to the PUC, and they're going to have the ability to bear the cost that going under PUC brings with it. So it's just as times have changed, as markets have changed, as inflation has increased everything, this is going to serve Greater Minnesota communities and give them that chance to get their infrastructure built out so they can be ready for bigger and better things.
Representative Jones?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Igo. And I'm not trying to be kind of a stick in the mud here. It's more, I think we all want to make the best use of our infrastructure dollars. And so if we're investing, you know, investing once in expanding gas infrastructure, we know when we put in infrastructure, it's there for a really long time. And so we really need to be smart about this. And I think especially when it comes to residential and commercial, we have electric opportunities for heating. And so, I'm really concerned about the overall cost, because in order to get to that decarbonized state, we're going to have to invest again. So that's just my concern.
Representative Igo?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Jones, I'll just make a closing comment to that. You know, there's industries that unfortunately are going to need to still have natural gas. When we look at where some of these facilities are in greater Minnesota, electric heat isn't there yet for a turkey or a poultry barn. It's not there for swine barns. You're going to need to have natural gas to keep those places warm for a while if we want to continue to have the produce that those produce. And that's just an example I use right away off the bat. But there just are some things that we're going to need this infrastructure for. This is not coming at, you know, we shouldn't be, and again, this would be a private business decision to invest. This bill isn't asking for any dollars or cents from the state of Minnesota to build out this infrastructure. So I think I see your point in your conversation, but I think these things are two separate issues, and we need to be able to allow this kind of diversification in greater Minnesota so we can continue to grow our economies and grow our communities.
Representative Jones, good. All right. Anybody else? Representative Kraft.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Igo. I'm finding it hard to fully understand this. So I guess the situation is you've got these three entities that are all owned by the same company that add up to about to 5,000. A couple of questions. What would stop if a utility wanted to get away from PUC regulation of, you know, size around 10,000 customers, of setting up a bunch of shell groups to stay under the number?
Representative Igo or Sorrentino?
I think I'll go to my test friend.
I'm trying to get my head around your question. You're asking what would prevent a company from setting up separate entities to try to avoid regulation? Is that what you're asking?
Representative Kraft.
Mr. Chair. Yes. Because I think what we're saying here is the law right now says 5,000 customers. And what you're saying is, well, we have these three separate entities that are each less than that, but are adding up to almost about to hit 5,000. So we should be regular. It shouldn't apply. So what would stop a utility that, say, had 10,000 customers across a couple, like three towns, of splitting that into three separate entities like this, still owned by the same company, and then to get around PUC regulation? What would stop that?
Ms. Sorrentino?
Yeah, it's not a matter of trying to avoid regulation, I guess. The reason that we believe there needs to be a system-specific focus is that the reasons that PUC rate regulation doesn't work well for small systems is that the cost to build a small system is quite a bit higher on a per-customer basis than it is for a large metropolitan utility. And I think the only reason that we presented it as we have three separate companies, which were all formed not as a means of trying to avoid regulation, they had separate ownership for a while, each of them, then two of them changed and they have common ownership now, and the third company is completely separate, but they're all commonly branded. And so the PUC looked at those and said, okay, well, it's really all the same utility. And so they're looking at our seven separate systems that all have seven separate cost structures, different rates across all the systems. We partnered with communities in each one of those locations to build a system that is suited to that community. And now we're looking at the prospect of having to send all of it to the PUC if we add customers. And tell each one of those local city councils and joint powers boards, you no longer have the authority to oversee our rates. You have to do what the PUC says. And we don't think that's in line with the original intent of the exemption.
Representative Kraft.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I wasn't insinuating that you were setting it up to skirt this. I'm just like saying, and I think you didn't, I appreciate your explanation, but there would be nothing to stop a utility from doing that, what I suggested. that was a statement. But in your various seven organizations, do you share some resources? Do you share, I don't know, HR, billing? Do you share resources across the seven organizations?
Ms. Sorrentino?
Yes, some.
Yeah. Okay.
Representative Kraft, you have a follow-up?
I think I'm done for now. Thanks.
Okay, Representative Carroll.
Thank you, Chair. And maybe I'll help Representative Kraft out a little bit. It sounds like what he's getting at is to whether you have an operating subsidiary and a holding company. So what's to prevent a holding company that has operating subsidiaries from being set up to skirt the intent of this legislation?
Representative Igoe or Ms. Sorrentino? If he needs to repeat the question, it's okay too.
You're wondering what would prevent a company from setting up subsidiary entities to operate a small gas system to skirt the regulation and fall under this rather than going to the PUC. And I would say it's a perfectly legitimate possibility that a large utility may set up a smaller utility or a small system in one of these towns and partner with the community. Honestly, I don't think there should be anything that would prevent that, as long as they carved out separate resources and had some local oversight. That's my opinion, but I think that would be in keeping with the intent. I mean, the intent of the statute originally, or the exemption in the statute originally, was to allow for small towns to partner with utilities to build a system to serve their community.
And if I could add to
Representative Igoe,
if you look at what the provided information here, the PUC is already looking at three separate subsidiaries and saying you are one. So I think the PUC's already got oversight that's going to be looking for that. And if you did see these shell corporations stand up, I think the PUC would realize that very quickly and not allow it to happen.
Representative Carroll, do you have a follow-up? All right. Any other questions? Representative Igoe, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Kraft. Oh, you're back on the list. Sorry about that.
Sorry. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just struggling with processing this all. So my concern about this and thinking about it is that I think the PUC looked at your claims and said, you know, based on how the thing is structured, no, we think you're one we think you're a utility, one, and so should be regulated. So like the PUC, who has a lot of expertise in this, looked at that and came, and then, as is your right, as is Representative Igoe's absolute right, is to come here and to change the approach. But like as I think about it, I then go to, well, you know, if that's what they found, that you with the sharing of resources and things, that you're one utility, how is it different than a utility that may serve multiple communities that are all under 5,000? Mm-hmm. So I, you know, with that, I think we should, maybe there may certainly be issues here in terms of PUC regulation and costs for smaller groups, and maybe that's something to be looked at. But it feels like this solution here is not it, and I'm going to vote no. Thanks.
You know, Representative Kraft, one thought that came to my mind while we're here in testimony was kind of other similarities of, you know, something like this that's maybe moved through the legislature. And one of the areas that kind of came to mind was the small brewers and how, you know, from a cask productions, you know, so many kegs or so many year, then they can still sell within their bottles, you know, sell their bottles right out of the back door. And so, you know, oftentimes, whether it was that in that part of statute, it was an arbitrary number set at a certain amount of kegs produced and sold per year, allowed you to be able to move on to the next side or move above a certain level, then you couldn't sell out the back door or have a tasting room or tap room. And this obviously is a different, but this is kind of a repeat of taking a number that is fairly arbitrary and potentially changing that to maybe better fit the real dynamics of the market. So, Representative Jones.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Igoe. I also, it's occurred to me that I'm curious how ECO would play into this. So my understanding is that, you know, large utilities are subject to ECO, the ECO law. So there's providing of energy efficiency programming for customers, and I'm wondering how this would impact customers' availability to get those access those programs.
Representative Igoe.
As it pertains to ECO, I actually don't have the direct answer on that. I would defer maybe to nonpartisan on that one or to my testifier if they want to say anything to that.
We'd like to call on Bob Eloff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm not sure. Representative Jones, I'm trying to think if companies this small are subject to ECO. They're not getting their, depending on where they're getting their supplies of gas from. It's not clear to me if they're getting gas supplies directly to your company or from a larger entity that might be subject to ECO.
Representative Jones?
So it seems like it's a little bit of an unknown, and I guess that's a concern. If this bill moves forward, I think we would want to take a look at that because energy efficiency programming kind of benefits everyone, and I'd want to make sure that we have that available.
All right. Representative Igo.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, for the discussion today. Again, this bill is just getting at a couple major tenets. It's allowing for more environmental and economical opportunity for greater Minnesota. You know, looking at one of the handouts in front of us today, one of the communities on there is the Cass Lake system, right? It is partnered with one of our tribal communities. And right now, if they wanted to expand some natural gas to that facility to be able to have more affordable, reliable power or energy in their community, they can't. And that's inequitable. And I think that's what we're looking at with this bill today is let's return some equity to these smaller communities that are trying to build themselves out so they can be here for the long run and support themselves for the long run. So I would encourage the committee's support today, and thank you again for the conversation.
All right, Representative Igo renews his motion that House File 252 be placed on the General Register. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
No.
The motion prevails, and the bill is on its way to the General Register. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, we have House File 787, Representative Anderson. If you want to head on up. All right, Representative Anderson moves that House File 787 be placed on the register. Representative Anderson, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Thanks for hearing the bill today. And with that, Mr. Chair, I have an amendment.
All right. Representative, if you could maybe just move a little closer to the microphone as well, and maybe I'm just deaf too, but Representative Anderson, if you want to present your amendment to get the bill in the shape that you'd like it.
Yes, Mr. Chair. Like to move the DE1 amendment, and what this amendment does is just better aligns the intent of the bill, which is to exempt utilities from having to apply the carbon-free standard to generation that they may have outside of Minnesota.
All right. All in favor of the amendment, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
No.
The ayes have it. All right. Your bill as amended. Representative Anderson.
That was a strong endorsement. So, anyway. Again, thanks for this opportunity. House File 787 is a bill that provides a necessary clarification to Minnesota's 100% carbon-free by 2040 law. House File 787 ensures that our policy remains focused on electricity generation within Minnesota's borders and doesn't attempt to regulate power plants in neighboring states, something that has been already ruled unconstitutional in federal court. Minnesota's carbon-free law was passed with the intent of transitioning the state's electricity to carbon-free sources. And while I didn't support that mandate, it's now law, and we must ensure that it's implemented in a way that is legally sound and does not expose Minnesota to costly litigation. In North Dakota versus Hettinger, a federal court struck down Minnesota's prior attempt to regulate out-of-state electricity production, ruling that it violated the dormant Commerce Clause of the U.S. Constitution, the Federal Power Act, and the Clean Air Act. As a result, Minnesota taxpayers were forced to pay over $1.3 million in legal fees to the state of North Dakota. And without House File 787, we are risking another costly and, I think, unwinnable legal battle. And I think all of you have in your packets a letter from North Dakota Governor Kelly Armstrong, and you can peruse that at your leisure. The law as currently written could be interpreted as an attempt to control how electricity is generated in North Dakota and other states that export power here into Minnesota. That interpretation would again violate federal law and invite litigation, diverting resources away from meaningful energy policy and toward unnecessary legal expenses. And with that, Mr. Chair, I have a testifier who would like to explain the bill further.
All right. Thank you, Representative Anderson. We have Jonathan Fortner from the Lignite Energy Council. If you'd get to the table and introduce yourself for the committee, and you can move on with your testimony.
Mr. Chairman, thank you for the opportunity to testify today. For the record, my name is Jonathan Fortner on behalf of the Lignite Energy Council. This bill is a common sense clarification to ensure that Minnesota's 100% carbon-free 2040 law is not interpreted as an extraterritorial regulation of legal business activity and electricity production in another state. For decades, North Dakota's energy industry has played a critical role in providing affordable, reliable baseload electricity to Minnesota consumers. Our longstanding energy partnership has contributed to economic stability and grid reliability for both of our states. Today, North Dakota exports more than 20,000 gigawatt hours of electricity annually. Much of it flows into Minnesota through the MISO grid. North Dakota's traditional baseload generation has helped maintain grid resilience, particularly during times of peak demand and extreme weather. At the same time, North Dakota remains a national leader in environmental stewardship. Our state ranks third in the nation for air and water quality, and we're one of only four states that has never violated the federal ambient air quality standards. Moreover, North Dakota is at the forefront of carbon capture and storage innovation, investing over $268 million in clean energy research and development through programs such as the Clean Sustainable Energy Authority. Our unique geology provides an unmatched opportunity for safe and permanent carbon sequestration, with a capacity to store over 252 billion tons of CO2, equivalent to over 50 years of the nation's entire carbon emissions. The passage of House File 787, ensures that Minnesota will continue to benefit from North Dakota's energy production and our commitment to clean energy innovation by clarifying that Minnesota's carbon-free standard applies only to in-state generation. This bill prevents unintended consequences that could hinder carbon capture efforts or disrupt interstate energy commerce. The alternative is an interpretation that extends Minnesota's policies beyond its borders, raising significant constitutional concerns as already decided in the North Dakota v. Hettinger case. Minnesota's energy future is best secured through continued collaboration with its neighbors. By supporting this bill, you uphold the integrity of interstate commerce, ensure continued access to reliable electricity for Minnesota ratepayers, and allow North Dakota's energy industry to fully realize its potential in carbon capture and sequestration technologies. I respectfully ask the committee to support House File 787 to help reinforce the strong energy partnership between our two states. Thank you for your time, and I would be willing to stand for any questions.
Are there any questions at all? All right. We'll just keep going. If you do think of one, feel free to raise your hand, but we have more testifiers that signed up. We have Vita Connitz from the Minnesota DFL Environmental Caucus. Connitz. You want to introduce yourself for the committee? Thank you.
Hello, Chair Swazinski and members of the House Energy Committee. My name is Vita Connitz. I'm a mom, a grandma, a retired high school science teacher, and I'm not a paid lobbyist. I'm a volunteer, a citizen lobbyist. I represent the DFL Environmental Caucus. We advocate for action on climate and preservation of the protection of the environment and have been doing so since 2015. You are all here as public servants, and I thank you for your service and believe your intentions, Mr. Anderson, for bringing this bill forward are honorable. But frankly, my first reaction after reading House File 787 was outrage. Why are we hearing yet another bill that threatens the health and security of our children and grandchildren? Then I read North Dakota Governor Kelly Armstrong's is threatening a lawsuit to protect that dangerous lignite coal that they value so much. But legal precedent has been shown will strongly support such a lawsuit, will not be successful. I hope you all read the testimony Fresh Energy submitted from the Harvard law lawyer saying, in several cases, this has not worked. No one elected representatives from North Dakota to represent the Minnesota people here. You are representing us. And this isn't the first time that North Dakota has worked to prop up their coal industry, their dirty coal industry, at the expense of the environment and the autonomy of Minnesotans. You may recall in 2021, Great River Energy had planned to close Coal Creek Station and tap into North Dakota's abundant wind energy with investments that would bring 95% clean energy at lower cost to their member owners such as me. But the McLean County Board adopted a zoning change that prohibited new energy generation, new energy transmission lines, a move that banned new wind farms access to Great River's transmission lines. There is no valid legal, economic, or environmental reason to pass this bill. You must act to protect the citizens of Minnesota from the harm and the significant financial burden of the continued use of dirty fossil fuels and lignite coal. Get our electric utilities to seek clean, renewable energy options and make Minnesota a leader, continue to be a leader in the clean energy revolution. The benefits will be cheaper, reliable, more efficient electric energy with a net positive impact on our economy, our health, and our climate. And I thank you for listening.
All right, thank you. Are there any other questions? All right, Representative Anderson, to your bill. Oh, we have a list. Is there any members from the public that would like to testify on behalf of this bill? Representative Akam?
I will just maybe have some comments. I don't know that I have any questions. I think the bill is pretty straightforward, and I think it's intention is to move us backwards. I think that when we passed the 100% clean energy bill in Minnesota, it was done with a lot of input by a large stakeholder group. And I think Minnesotans are glad that we are moving in that direction for many reasons, economical, environmental, public health, and all of the things. I think when we are looking to other states and other countries and the energy that we take in, there are certainly a lot of considerations. I think the letter that was included in our packets today demonstrates that there are some very people who are much more educated on this and work in this area have looked at our bill, have looked at our policy, excuse me, and feel that we are in a very strong situation or a strong standing. So I think the threats of a lawsuit are just that. I think they are threats. I think that when we talk about new industries coming to Minnesota, data centers, for example, one of the reasons they're coming here is because of our policies on clean energy. And so for a whole host of reasons, I think this is absolutely it's not a good bill. So I encourage members on this side to vote no. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Hollins.
Thank you, Chair. I do have a question for the bill author because I've been reviewing some of the court cases around this, and I know that there was a decision, I've got the decision in my hand, was upheld by Justice Neil Gorsuch in the 10th Circuit Court, back when he was in the 10th Circuit Court, saying that Colorado's clean energy law was not unconstitutionally getting in the way of commerce. And they did a pretty in-depth analysis of why that is. And I was wondering, what's different about Minnesota's law that makes you think that it's vulnerable to lawsuits?
Representative Anderson.
Mr. Chair and Representative Hollins, I'm not a lawyer. I don't know what Colorado's law is, so I can't comment on that. I just know that from past history, Minnesota did lose a case in the Hettinger case, $1.3 million in court costs. And again, I can't comment on Colorado's law.
Representative Hollins, you have a follow-up?
I do. I guess I understand. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Representative. I understand that you're not a lawyer. I think when you were drafting this bill, was there prior lawsuits that were taken into consideration that would, besides the one, you know, when we look around the country and we look at what is happening, because there are a lot of different clean energy standards that happen across the country, and I'm wondering if there was one that you thought stood out or that was a good model that would be immune to lawsuits.
Representative Anderson.
Mr. Chair and Representative Hollins, again, I didn't write the bill. The revisers wrote it with the input from researchers and staff, people that are a lot smarter than I am. I'm just a farmer who likes electricity when I turn the switch on, and I don't mean to get away from your question because I can't answer it, to be honest. We talk about affordable electricity, and where I live in the country, when you have livestock in the wintertime and such, reliability is the key component to me of electricity. And I think Minnesota attempting to shut off the power line at the border with North Dakota, I don't know how you would do that. If we're going to say we can't have coal power from North Dakota, okay, then let's walk the walk and shut that power line off then, if it's coal power that we don't want here in Minnesota. So I believe in this bill. I think it's a common sense bill. They're not going to stop generating power out there. And the other thing, and again, I don't understand totally, when this power goes on the MISO grid that encompasses 13 states and part of Canada, how do you differentiate what is coal power from Bismarck, for example, from a wind farm in Ashtabula? It's on the grid, and again, it's used by MISO, delegated, bought and sold on the MISO market, and it becomes a commodity among all 13 states in the foreign country.
Representative Hollins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I guess when I'm thinking about this, first I want to say, if you talk to the 100% carbon-free bill author, we know that it was crafted specifically to avoid being the subject of lawsuits. And I will say it's been a couple years now, and there hasn't been a lawsuit. Not that I'm inviting one. But the other thing that I will say is, as a representative of the state of Minnesota and of the 44,000 people that I represent, it's important to me that I'm looking out for them and for their children and for their grandkids and for the people who actually live in my district and live in the entire state of Minnesota. So, frankly, I don't care what North Dakota does. I think I have been very clear about this, and you can ask any of the stakeholders that I work with. When there are projects coming to Minnesota, I say, are there going to be Minnesota workers that are hired for these projects? If it's not, I don't want it. And that counts for transmission lines. That counts for everything that we do in this space. And I think the same thing is true. That's great, and North Dakota can do whatever they want. They are their own independent state. But my job is to look out for Minnesotans, and I have to care for making sure my kids have fresh air to breathe and clean water to drink. And so for that reason, I just can't support this. I'm not here to advocate for North Dakota and making sure that, you know, they get free access to the population that we have in the state of Minnesota with their energy. So thank you.
Representative Jones.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Representative Anderson, for the opportunity to talk about this I guess I kind of just have a comment, I think, because Representative Hollins had a question and you weren't able to answer it. And so my understanding of the reason why we had the legal argument around the current law is much stronger than what we had in 2007, is that in 2007, the part that was that North Dakota disliked and won on were around the power plant prohibition. So those are much more concrete, much more specific. And that in that court case, they did not go after our renewable energy standard. And so, you know, that was a decision at the time. We don't know why they didn't do that, and maybe that they felt like they had a weak argument. And so noting that, and also noting that Neil Gorsuch's his argument in the Colorado case is similar, is around, you know, just requiring that the energy be clean, is at a high enough level that it didn't break the interstate commerce law. So I think that's that's the reason why we can have faith that the way that we've currently set up our law should not violate the Interstate Commerce Clause, and that seems to be the core argument for this bill. And so I think that it's been I've shown that it's not necessary. So thank you,
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and we are sitting here conjecturing on what may happen in a court of law. And I don't know. I don't think any one of us know for sure what may happen. The letter from North Dakota Governor seemed to indicate that they had a legal position to challenge this. And again, I'm not a lawyer, but I think at least the possibility is there, is what I would say to you.
Okay. Representative Jones.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Anderson. Similar to Representative Hollins, I think that we have a sound legal defense here. We need to be caring about Minnesotans more than we care about industries in North Dakota.
All right, Representative Igo.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So a couple comments to start, and then I do have a question I want to follow up with. I think first statement I'm going to make is, once again, we have Republicans here in the Energy Committee with the section of 2040 open in front of us, and we aren't doing anything to repeal or go back on it. All we are trying to do today, and this is why I want to thank you, Representative Anderson, is because you're saying, listen, I just don't want to make sure the state gets sued. I want to take care of ratepayers. I want to take care of all constituents of the state of Minnesota in every one of our districts, that they aren't going to have to foot a bill over potential oversight and legislation. And I think that's incredibly wise. I think that's incredibly smart. I think that's actually showing quite a bit of collaboration and bipartisanship that most Minnesotans, if you ask them, want to see. And that's what we're here talking about today. You know, there's been a lot of conversations about whether we'll be sued, whether we won't be sued, and we're talking about a letter from another governor. You know, I may not be a lawyer. Representative Anderson, you may not be a lawyer, but the governor of North Dakota is a lawyer. So if he is sending that letter, I would like to think that he might have some ideas about there could be a potential lawsuit. So again, we opened up the statute in front of us. We aren't getting out. We aren't cutting out any of the deadlines. We're not cutting out any of the percents. We're just saying, let's clean this up and keep it safe. So I do want to ask if there's anyone from the Department of Commerce here, if I could ask a question to them, if there's anyone that I could ask that to.
If you want to come forward, introduce yourself to the committee, and then Representative Igo to your question.
Thank you. So my question would be, so the amendment here in front of us that we've changed now in the bill that's in front of us is only going to apply to in-state generation, and if that does not change Minnesota's goal of achieving 100% carbon-free electricity by 2040, can you explain to me how this amendment would negatively impact our goals that are in state law?
To the person from Commerce, if you'd like to introduce yourself and Sam.
Chair Sudzinski. Representative Igo, for the record, my name is Sam Smith, and I'm the Government Affairs Director for the Department of Commerce. And to make sure I understand your question, you're asking how this amendment interferes with 2040?
Correct.
Yep. Representative Igo?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Mr. Smith.
Yeah, Chair Sudzinski, Representative Igo, you know, from our perspective, there is no need for this legislation in House File 787. The language was thoroughly vetted and reviewed by a host of stakeholders across the spectrum on the legislation, and would add that we believe it's constitutional. House File 787, as amended, undermines Minnesota's 2040 plan and does not help us achieve our climate goals by allowing for pulling power that's potentially made with carbon. So,
Representative Igo?
So I wasn't getting an answer. So my question one though is that there's nothing in the bill as amended that says that we could use carbon-free power in Minnesota. So you're saying that it would change 2040? That's what I'm trying to get at. How would this change the 2040 goal?
Mr. Smith.
Chair Swedzinski, Representative Igo, it would theoretically allow for pulling carbon power from North Dakota into Minnesota, as I understand the bill.
Representative Igo, okay.
I think that's why we're looking at changing the policy, because that would open us up to a lawsuit right there. Thank you.
Any other questions for Mr. Smith? Thank you very much for coming for us. Oh, Representative Kraft.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Deja vu. We had this exact discussion in 2023 at length. I'm not a lawyer either, but I do encourage folks to read the letter from Ari Pesco, Director of Electricity Law Initiative at Harvard Law School, back from then. To Representative Igo's comments of we should be responsible, and because someone is threatening a lawsuit should not do something, I would say that anyone can threaten a lawsuit at any point in time. And that's a pretty low standard for taking action or not taking action. By the way, I'd like to ask for a roll call on this.
Okay. Roll call being asked for, we will do one on passage.
So, in 2007, there was a bipartisan Next Generation Energy Act signed by Republican Governor Tim Pawlenty. One portion of that was challenged successfully by North Dakota. What we did in 2023 is not that, is very clearly not that, and that's what this letter says from this Harvard Law lawyer that looks at this stuff. We refuted it then. Xcel, as we've heard, is on the path to get to the 2040 law several years in advance. To Representative Igo's point, question, I believe the issues is that the 2040 law looks at retail sales, right? And I think actually this would set us back quite a bit in its approach. This kind of law or this kind of bill. And so we don't need it. We're on path. It doesn't. It's more than half of the states in the country have some of a law like 2040, a renewable standard law. Those haven't been challenged and found that they're wrong or haven't lost. Any time they have been challenged, they've been successfully upheld. So this again seems to me like let's pull back more messaging stuff from 2023 that we've been through and is just unnecessary. And so I urge everyone to vote no.
All right. Representative Hollins.
Sorry, second bite at the apple. I think actually Representative Kraft said most of what I was trying to say. I am a lawyer, and you can say that you are subject to lawsuits or that anybody can sue anybody. You can file it. You have to pay a filing fee. You have to fill out some paperwork, and you can do it. You might not win. But the fact that you're saying we're opening ourselves up to lawsuits, anybody can sue anybody. It's the beauty of America, or the pain of America. But what I will say is just because you are, I think, I don't need to repeat what Representative Kraft said so eloquently. The reality is if we tried to block every time that there might be a lawsuit, we would all need to sit in our homes and do literally nothing, because you could walk down the stairs of the Capitol and trip and fall, and that could be a lawsuit. You can drink water that isn't clean, and that's a lawsuit. I mean, it's literally anything. So when we are talking about something as critical as having clean air, clean water, and the safety and security of our children and grandchildren, I think that is worth the risk. So thank you.
All right. I kind of caught that. All right. Thank you, Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question for Mr. Smith with the Department of Commerce, if you take another question. While he's running up there, since Minnesota is part of MISO, a multi-state, you know, a grid, how do you expect to track or enforce whether or not they're contributing that source of power?
Mr. Smith?
Chair Switzinski, Representative Murphy, I'm not sure of the answer to that. I'll have to get back to you.
Representative Murphy?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Can you tell different sources of power as it's being fed through the line?
Representative Smith, or Mr. Smith.
Chair Switzinski, Representative Murphy, I will admit that I am not an expert on how electricity travels across state lines. If you want, we can get back to you with some more information on that.
Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Smith. You know, the fact of the matter is you can't tell where the power comes from. You can try to guess where it came from, but once it gets on the MISO grid, you have no idea where the source of the power is. All you can say, if you want them to accomplish our goals in the state of Minnesota, is basically say it's zero. You have to be zero for all your other customers or any transmission line that comes into Minnesota. Bottom line is coal contributes about 50% of our power in Minnesota. So it will be very helpful for us to have access to their power. And my hope is that if they don't say no to Minnesota for the power. So with that, that's my question. But yeah, I'll be anxious to get your response. Thank you, Mr. Smith.
Mr. Smith, anything? Rep. Murphy, you satisfied there? All right. Representative Jones.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I can maybe help out with Mr. Murphy's question. So in Minnesota, we require our utilities to create integrated resource plans. These plans describe what resources we use to generate electricity. And we regulate that. That is how we know how utilities are complying with the 2040 law.
Representative Murphy.
I have a follow-up, Representative Jones. So would you agree, Mr. Smith, this question is for you then to help clarify this conversation we're having. Would you agree that Minnesota has the authority to regulate electricity generation within its own borders?
Mr. Smith.
Chair Switzinski, Rep. Murphy, I am not a lawyer. I'm uncomfortable speculating on this. I'm just going to be honest.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Murphy.
One more question. Do you have any idea if it's okay for the state of Minnesota to regulate power or energy in another state?
Mr. Smith.
Chair Switzinski, Representative Murphy. Again, I'm not a lawyer. I'm hesitant to speculate on the details of energy law.
Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, Mr. Smith, you'd like to get back to me on that? That'd be great. Because I'd like to see where it says that it's okay for us to regulate another state's power. So I'd be very anxious on that. Thanks.
Representative Jones.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Murphy, to your question, yes, with the Utility Monopoly Compact, we regulate our utilities here. And so that says, you know, they have to then comply with the carbon-free law. And so they can choose how they are going to meet that through their IRP. They can choose to get, you know, hydropower from Manitoba or wherever. So they can get that outside state lines. We just give them criteria for what that type of power is.
Any other questions, comments? All right. A roll call being... actually, Representative Anderson, you can finish off with your bill if you just your closing comments.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just sat here thinking, just thought of a hypothetical. You know, if we pass this law knowing that North Dakota uses coal to generate electricity and that we import electricity from North Dakota, are we in a kind of backward way trying to regulate how North Dakota generates electricity? Just a question to ponder. Mr. Chair, in the conclusion, House File 787 does not weaken Minnesota's carbon-free standard. It simply clarifies that the mandate applies to power generation within our own state. It's a reasonable and responsible fix to ensure that Minnesota's ratepayers continue to receive affordable, reliable baseload power and that we reduce our carbon emissions in our own state. With that, Mr. Chair, I would encourage a positive vote.
All right. Representative Anderson renews his motion that House File 787 be placed on the General Registered. A roll call being called for. Roll call will be taken.
Chair Swidzinski.
Aye.
Vice Chair Murphy.
Aye.
Lead Acomb.
No.
Representative Kraft.
No.
Representative Anderson.
Anderson, aye.
Representative Baker.
Yes.
Representative Carroll.
No.
Representative Frazier.
No.
Representative Hollins.
No.
Representative Igo.
Yes.
Representative Jones.
No.
Representative Mahmoud.
No.
Representative Mekland.
Yes.
Representative Sexton.
Yes.
Representative Weiner.
Yes.
Thank you. All right. There being 8 ayes and 7 nays, the motion passes, and the bill is on its way as amended to the General Register. All right, members, that is all we have for today. Our next meeting will be Thursday, March 13th. We will be hearing Representative Igo's House File 2002. Not a space oddity. And this meeting is adjourned.